no, I never set out to be a cookbook author, but I've just enjoyed this journey. And I do really believe in Florida's culinary value. We are the laughingstock of the country in so many ways, or we are key lime pie and grouper sandwiches, nothing against those, but we are also so much more than that. And that's what I try to highlight in the book.
Welcome to Forum, Beyond the Pages, the podcast that tells the stories behind the stories of Florida Humanities award-winning magazine. I'm Andrew Quintana. It's game on in this newest season as we speak to the writers who penned the articles in our spring 2024 sports issue of Forum. This week, food writer Dahlia Colon on her new book, The Florida Vegetarian Cookbook. We're taking a time out from all the sports talk. Today, we're focusing on a new book that journalist Dahlia Colon has been cooking up. It's a cookbook, which may seem obvious for those familiar with Colon's work. However, it's not just any cookbook. It's a book of Florida vegetarian recipes. Colon's more than 100 recipes and personal stories guide readers to discovering flavorful dishes that showcase Florida's bounty of fruits, vegetables, herbs, and grains. Dahlia Colon is a frequent contributor to Forum magazine. Her recurring A Taste of Florida column explores the stories behind some of the state's most iconic recipes. Outside of her work with Forum, Colon is also an Emmy Award-winning multimedia journalist and the host of WUSF's The Zest podcast and WEDU's weekly arts and culture show, Arts Plus. Before we get into the book, I wanted to start with the dirty little secret that you confess in this article. You don't eat a lot of the food you write about because you're a vegetarian.
That is true.
Yeah. You compare the irony of being a vegetarian food writer in Florida to wearing a scarlet letter. I guess you've gotten a lot of pushback or feedback about that with your writing. I want to know how you managed to maneuver around the dietary restriction and still have a very successful career as a food writer in Florida.
Well, I will say that being a food writer and podcaster does not involve as much eating as one might think. Like today we're having this conversation about my cookbook and we are not eating anything. So there's that. Food is about so much more than just what's on the plate. It's about history and culture and identity and a million other things. So food is really just the gateway. For that reason, I can speak to someone on the Zest podcast about stone crab or ropa vieja or the Cuban sandwich. And we don't necessarily have to get into the nitty gritty of how to make it. There are a million places where you can Google that. But this is more about the history and the culture of the food itself.
It's perfect because that's how you almost describe the book in this article. You call it an ode to Florida produce, which to me is a brilliant way to approach a cookbook on a state whose food has been just mass produced to a nauseating level. You know, the saying, you know, always imitated, never replicated. That's how I feel about Florida food and all the famous dishes that people talk about. But to really turn it around and say, we're going to focus on the greens, which are usually complementing or being masked by some protein in a lot of famous Florida dishes, I wanted to dig a little deeper about what you define as Florida produce and what makes it so unique.
I think of Florida produce as the fruits, vegetables, and herbs that grow here in Florida. I mean, we are in the breadbasket of the United States in terms of a lot of these things. You think of Plant City, it's the winter strawberry capital of the world. I mean, I'm a terrible gardener and I have a ton of cherry tomatoes right now in my garden that just like grow on their own. It's like they were born to do it. And, you know, a lot of people have a pot of herbs on their kitchen sink or their balcony of their apartment building. It's just really easy to grow things here. And when the food is fresher, it just makes you want to eat it. It makes you want to celebrate it. And you don't have to do a lot to it. If you've ever watched a lot of these cooking shows, you know, Ina Garten talks a lot about good ingredients, good olive oil, get yourself some good garlic. We have the good ingredients here in Florida, and you don't really have to do much in order for them to shine.
What comes to mind when you think of Florida produce? What are your go-to staples?
The first thing I think of are all the roadside produce stands we have. We think of that as normal, but as someone who was born and raised in Ohio, I can tell you not everyone has that. Whatever is in the back of that pickup truck is fresh. If you see a guy on the corner with a truck full of watermelon, that's going to be some good watermelon. I think of strawberries, blueberries, tomatoes. in the winter, we get a lot of the greens and vegetables. I have a ton of cauliflower right now. I never thought I'd be someone who could grow cauliflower. And there's all kinds of things you can do with it. You can just roast it. You can make buffalo cauliflower, which is one of my favorite recipes from the cookbook. So I just think of the bounty that is here in Florida.
Was there a moment of inspiration to make this cookbook? You mentioned that your journey into becoming a vegetarian started almost a decade ago. So I wonder if there was a moment where you thought, let me use this lifestyle choice that I have to create a cookbook to inspire people to kind of explore this side of the culinary world, or if it was just something you always wanted to do. If you always wanted to make a cookbook and you just happened to become a vegetarian, so I'm going to do it on that.
Very fair question. So my journey to becoming a vegetarian was like a lot of people. I watched a documentary and went cold turkey, no pun intended. But 4% of Americans identify as vegetarian, meaning they don't eat meat. And 1% identify as vegan, which means no animal products at all. So eggs, milk, cheese, even honey, they would not have. I'm mostly vegan, sometimes vegetarian. So that's why I called the book the Florida Vegetarian Cookbook. And most of the recipes are completely free of any animal product. But I never set out to write a cookbook. I was a journalist like yourself. I worked for the Tampa Bay Times. I produced a food podcast for WUSF Public Media called The Zest, which I still do. And then during COVID, University Press of Florida contacted me, I think because of the food journalism I've done and the Heritage Kitchen column that I've written for Forum for the past several years. And they said, we are developing new cookbook authors. Are you interested in writing a cookbook? Okay, this was 2021. I had two small children. We're doing the e-learning. We're still wiping off our groceries. I don't need to remind you, we also have PTSD from that period. So I barely could find time to take a shower, let alone how am I going to write a whole cookbook? I've never done anything like that. But it seemed like an interesting opportunity. And if someone believes I can do something, if they believe in me, then I believe in me. So I took on the challenge and just took it 1 week at a time. I set a goal of creating 5 good recipes every week, which sometimes meant making 10 recipes because 5 of them were terrible. And shout out to my husband, Braulio, who ate the ones that did not end up in the cookbook. So no, I never set out to be a cookbook author, but I've just enjoyed this journey. And I do really believe in Florida's culinary value. We are the laughingstock of the country in so many ways, or we are key lime pie and Gruber sandwiches, nothing against those, but we are also so much more than that. And that's what I try to highlight in the book.
Taking on the challenge really is evident in this article you write for Forum when you give us kind of a behind the scenes look about how you put the cookbook together, because it never occurred to me how hard it would be to write an original recipe, let alone write a whole book of original recipe, until I read your experience putting this book together. I think my experience and a lot of people's experience is kind of like the one you described in your writing, where you say it's a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I don't ever measure. I don't weigh my ingredients. But clearly that was a process that took a lot to learn. I'm curious about when you finally cracked the code and figured out the process to not only making original recipes, but documenting them.
Crack the code. I like that, because the book has over 120 recipes. So you do have to be organized. So thank God for Google Docs and Google Sheets and all those tools that help keep us organized. The first couple weeks weren't too hard because everybody has their go-tos in the rotation, their greatest hits. So I just started with those. And you're right, I don't measure typically. Usually when I'm making dinner, I'm also like helping someone with their homework and stopping to let the dog out and doing a million other things. So to actually focus on what you're doing and measure and write it down, I'm not going to lie, it takes some of the joy out of cooking for me, but it's also a good exercise because then you can really share those recipes with family and friends and be sure that they're going to turn out well. And then I started thinking about what was in season, and I just sort of rode the wave of Florida's natural growing seasons. So in the winter, I thought about strawberries, blueberries, all the greens, collard greens, mustard greens, all those things. And I would sort of have a week devoted to one particular product. Okay, it's collard green week. What can I do? I can saute them. I can make collard green chips, which are my daughter Nora's favorite. I can puree the collard greens and put the juice into a cake and bring it to my neighbor's house where everyone thought it must be a pistachio cake, but they all gobbled it up. So it was helpful to challenge myself in that way and sort of gamify the process.
I like that you compare it to almost a challenge or a game where you're trying to put the pieces together and trying to figure out how do I organize all this. Did it ever really test your love of cooking when you were trying to figure out these dishes? Did it feel almost like I got to just find something to put together with this ingredient and it's just not coming to me. I really don't want to eat this. I'd rather just go to McDonald's right now. did it ever test your love of cooking, or did it almost reinvigorate it?
Good question. Well, I'm not a big McDonald's person. No,
it would have been a salad.
But for sure. but I love all sorts of other junk food. It's just McDonald's doesn't happen to be my drug of choice. But it did test it. And it's funny because in addition to producing the podcast and writing for Forum, I also am a producer and co-host for WEDU PBS here in Tampa Bay. I work on a show called WEDU Arts Plus. And I remember a few years ago, I interviewed this man who had made a movie, and he said about halfway through the process, I started to not only dislike this movie, I started to hate it. And I heard his voice in my mind. His name is Kevin. And I thought about how well his movie turned out because Kevin did not quit. And I told myself, just be Kevin, just keep going and everything will be okay. So there were definitely weeks when I just wanted to like have a bowl of cereal for dinner or have something that I knew was going to turn out. It's really frustrating to go to the market, buy all these ingredients, write down this recipe and have it not turn out. Because now I don't have a recipe for dinner tonight and I don't have a recipe to put in the cookbooks. So I'm not making progress. I can remember I was trying to think of what to do with jackfruit. If you've never seen a jackfruit, it is like the size of a watermelon. It looks like a medieval like torture device. It's like this giant fruit with like spikes all over it. Very difficult to cut. Although I've learned at Publix, you can ask and they'll cut it up for you. And there are a lot of Asian markets in particular where you can buy it in packages already cut. So work smarter, not harder. But I finally got this thing cut and I had the idea to do like a jackfruit ropa vieja because a lot of people use jackfruit as a substitute for like beef or pork because it's got that meaty consistency. So I remember my husband Braulio was watching TV in the living room and I was kind of looking over his shoulder and I was trying to cut. I was like fighting with this jackfruit. I finally got it all cut and I was going to put it in the crock pot with all this, you know, tomato and spices and onions and leave it overnight, set it and forget it. And the next morning I was going to wake up and we were going to have our fabulous dinner. That did not happen. It smelled disgusting. This jackfruit was too ripe. So it made everything too sweet. And it was a huge failure. This may not be the sustainable answer. This may not be the sustainably correct answer, but I had to get comfortable with throwing food away. Every basket that you shoot is not going to be the three-pointer that wins the game, the buzzer beater, right? Some of them are just going to be air balls and you have to be okay maybe throwing away some food, whether that's a recipe you try or even just a new product that you try from the grocery store, try to give it away to a neighbor. But also if you just stick with what's safe, then you'll just be eating the same three or four meals your entire life.
There's been a lot of well-documented dishes that everyone associates with Florida, but as someone who's on the ground floor of Florida's contemporary culinary scene, what are some of the emerging food trends that you think future generations are going to write about when it comes to Florida food?
What a great question. I would say when a lot of us think of Florida cuisine, we think of probably seafood. We think of Cuban, perhaps Puerto Rican. But now we're really starting to celebrate all the different ethnicities that are here in Florida and give them their opportunity to shine. So Haitian, and of course, you know, no surprise to people in Miami, but you're seeing the food respected on a level that it wasn't before. You know, Italian food used to be inexpensive and then it became, you know, this frou-frou stuff where you pay like $30 for a little bowl of spaghetti. That's starting to happen with other cultures and I couldn't be happier for them. So Haitian, Argentinian is getting big, especially in South Florida with the beef. So maybe I'll give the jackfruit another chance and try to put my own riff on that. We're seeing a lot of fusion between cultures, especially in places like Orlando, which is just such a melting pot. You have so many people who live there. And then, of course, all the people who come to visit and go to the theme parks, but you see things like a Middle Eastern taco fusion restaurant. And that's not something we may have seen in the past. And then, of course, as a plant-based eater, we are seeing a lot more options. I always tell people, don't worry, you pick the restaurant, I won't go hungry. Even if there's nothing on the menu for me, the chef's got some ideas. He or she has been thinking about it, and there's a good chance you'll be seeing it on the menu very soon. So even in my little suburb of Tampa, you know, we've got quite a few vegan spots now, which I never thought I'd see. So there's just room for everybody these days.
That was Dahlia Colon on her new book, The Florida Vegetarian Cookbook. Forum Beyond the Pages is produced by Florida Humanities. Our music was created by Tampa Bay area musician JJ Padishall. You can follow him on Instagram at JJ Padishall Music. Want to get the latest issue of Forum delivered to your door 3 times a year? Become a Florida Humanities member by visiting floridahumanities.org/membership. Until next time.